Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the White Owl Podcast, here to talk all things Canucks with Patrick Johnson and Ed Willis. I'm Paul Chapman. I should let you know that this podcast is brought to you by Key West Ford, BC's largest selection of trucks. If you want to check them out, keywestford.com. Gentlemen, Ed, let's start with you. I just wanted to jump into how this team has looked in the last week since we did a podcast. Again, the up and down nature of this team continues to surprise me a little bit, but where do you think this team is? Is it a week-to-week changing model? Are they in a good place? We seem to think playoffs are a given right now, but are you alarmed by the case of the last week?
No, not really. And I think the stretch of the schedule they have before them really sets up well for them, and they really should be able to secure something out of this. Now, if they don't, now we've got a problem, but I think it's something in the order of their nine of their next – of nine of the next 10 games, they're facing teams below the six or seven teams below the playoff bar. And, you know, I think we've talked about this in this podcast before. If you look over the season, it just seems when the schedule is set up well for them, that's when they've really made some hay. And I'm kind of expecting the same thing. I thought they had a real good response against Nashville on Monday night. And granted, it was a night where a lot of things went well for them, but they came out with an energy. It was kind of reverted back to that formula we've seen, which revolves around goaltending, the power play, the young players, and some depth scoring. And that was all in evidence on Monday night.
Patrick, you were just on the recent road trip. Your thoughts in terms of how this – I think sometimes we take for granted – we have talked about it all year, but we take for granted that it's still a very young team.
Yeah, it was funny on – not funny. It was terrible on Thursday, being reminded of what a Pettersson-less universe looks like, because, you know, good guy, you know, good bunch of guys, hard working hard, but they had no offense. And as Ed said, I mean, the key to this team is very much how their offense runs and how their goalies run, and that runs through their young players. I mean, Quinn Hughes continues to be a fantastic story. His development, I think we all thought he was going to be good, but you never really expect a number one defenseman, you know, to emerge just like that. And Pettersson, I think, has been, you know, obviously dealing with a bit of, you know, physical pressure, I suppose, and dealing with a bit of a back problem. But it's just such an interesting team to watch, and such a contrast, you know, to where they were. Ed and I were talking about this on the video, where they were 2 or 3 years ago. They're better stories there. They're a better team. And it's all because of those young guys.
Ed, you mentioned goaltending. There were times last night, and I have a love-hate thing with social media. Like, sometimes I just want to throw my phone out the window and just focus on the game, and other times
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Other times there's, you know, that you can really mine a whole bunch of pearls from watching or seeing people's reaction on social media. It was a stretch last night after the Canucks went up 4-0 where they were really under siege, and you just saw this reckoning of Canuck fans that Jacob Markstrom really has been the team MVP this year. I mean, Patrick's right. Hughes is a great story. Pettersson, absolutely the superstar of this team going forward. But this team is, I don't think, anywhere near where they are if it's not for Jacob Markstrom.
No, yeah, absolutely. And you really have to – it's funny. It's his triple crown numbers, goals against average, save percentage, are kind of – you know, they don't begin to reveal the kind of season he's had. But when you go into that second layer of fancy stats, they really are remarkable. But yeah, really, you know, and I go back to that run just before Christmas where they'd lost three out of four for whatever it was, ending up with a home ice loss to Montreal, and they got outplayed terribly over the next four games, but they won because Markstrom just boarded up the net. It shapes up a really interesting offseason, what they do with him, what they do with their goaltending going forward. But like in the here and now, yeah, he's been the team MVP. He's kind of allowed all these other elements of their games to kind of develop naturally and organically with a lot of pressure. Like, can you imagine if they would have that average goaltending. You know, and now the fingers started pointing at Patterson, at Hughes, at Brock Besser, who's, you know, I know he's hurt right now, but he's able to kind of almost go unnoticed through a really average season, and it all comes back to the goaltending.
Going to throw this out. I know, Patrick, you mentioned it about Quinn Hughes, but really, I think I don't want to go down to who gets credit for what, but when you look at the mentality of young players like Pettersson and like Hughes and, to some respect, Besser, certainly Horvat as well, there's a mentality and the attitude and a maturity that's attached to these players as much as the talent on the ice, and that's got to count for a lot.
It's a huge part of the story that, you know, as we're going to say his name, Judd Brackett drove this scouting team. And, you know, obviously Jim Benning's been part of that story as well because Jim is a scout. And he knows what it looks like. But the overall focus has been not just on the sort of on-ice upside, their ability to play, but what are they like off the ice? Are these good people? And so far, so good. The fact that these guys want to win is obvious, but their sort of ability to dial in and work ethic and just sort of say, okay, I need to be the best. I need to keep doing this. And we see this in Pettersson all the time. I mean, the guy is, we don't ask him about lacrosse-style goals because we know how mad it makes him that he hasn't scored one yet.
Well, then you should ask him that every day.
Yeah, you know,
another game you haven't scored one.
That would be the end.
Come on, think of the coffee,
yeah,
Patrick.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, that's where we're at. It's a, you know, that's how much he wants to score one. And the day we score one, the stories will last for days because he'd be more than happy to talk about it and how frustrated he was he couldn't do it. You know, Quinn Hughes, you know, I mentioned this on a video with Ed. You know, on Monday, there we are in the hallway, and Quinn comes. I'm still not quite sure where Quinn was coming from because it doesn't actually make sense the direction he was walking, but he was having a little stroll, just had a nice, you know, that confident look on his face that he always seems to have. And he just said, "Hey, how's it going?" And you're like, "Good." And I asked him how the chess series is going against Chris Tanev, and, well, we haven't played again yet, but it's just that quiet confidence, and he just is here to get it done, and the challenge presents itself and he gets it done, and it's because of his work ethic. He just wants to be the best out there.
Ed, you were around Hughes a little bit at the World Juniors. You'd written about him prior to him actually arriving here in the NHL. And you've seen a lot of young players come in. Are you surprised at this, or did you see this coming?
Oh, the production, absolutely. I don't think anybody could have said, okay, we're going to plug this guy in. He's going to run a pretty good NHL power play. He's going to probably break the rookie record for points by a defenseman in the Canucks. I don't think anybody could have foretold that. But what I can say is, I talked to him, actually, it was a pre-tournament game. They said USA Hockey set up a phoner with him. And, you know, and it, when it was done, I said, geez, kid, like, are you 17 or 32? He just had that kind of presence about him. And those things, you know, when you've covered the game for a while, you recognize people who understand the game, people who understand the responsibility of what it is to be an elite player. He's been around it literally since he was 10 years old in the Maple Leafs dressing room. And every step along the way, it just kind of reinforced, you know, who he is, how he goes about his business. And to me, that's the most impressive part about it. And it's what makes you think, look, this isn't a mirage. This is who he is. He was born for this. And I honestly think he will go down in history, if he stays healthy, as the greatest defenseman in Canucks history.
Yeah, I mean, it says a lot about the organization that you can make that determination now.
But, yeah.
I mean, certainly he's already, like, shown. I remember the conversation. I remember the stories about Edler. I remember stories about guys like Lidster and Olin back in the day who didn't quite get to that level, but Hughes certainly looks already as if he has that template.
If I can, and just, you know, going back to the draft, and I remember I had a conversation with Trevor Linden, and it was shortly before he was fired, as a matter of fact, but they were at scouting meetings and I was waiting to talk to him, and he comes out and he kind of, you know, it was an off the record conversation, but he laid out how he thought the first round might be, and the end game was always going to be Quinn Hughes. And it really depended on the two centers, Kotkaniemi and Barrett Hayton, who they didn't really know where they were going to fall, and they both went in the first five picks, and that opened the door. And I know Jim Benning was just ecstatic when Hughes fell in their lap. So he was always a guy. This is such a massive win for the organization to get a talent like that seventh overall. When you're talking, probably looking at about a 60-65% chance you're going to land an impact player.
And that was such a statement about the organization across the board knowing what they needed, that they need a, you know, it's obvious that you need to find a great defenseman, but they needed a guy who could move the puck, who could change the dynamic of that back end. You know, you think about the struggles just the NHL team was having moving the puck up the ice, but to get a guy like this who, you know, they knew in the next couple of years would come along and help with that process. You know, I'm sure they dreamed of him becoming the process, but it was such an incredible move for them. And, you know, you're right. I mean, you were there. I wasn't there, but you hear even now the sort of energy from anybody in that organization. When you talk about Quinn Hughes and the draft day and him falling in their laps, they still, I think, can't quite believe the stroke of luck that they landed with him.
Patrick, you had talked about life without Pettersson. So, we have seen, obviously, Besser injured now, a couple of guys, Bailey and McEwen brought up from Utica. How do you feel about the depth of this team? Like, are they able to weather a storm here? Because, obviously, where we are in the calendar, I start to see the trade talk and whether this is just conversation or whether they feel they're actually going to need something.
Well, Mark Besser's been struggling. We know that. So it is a bit odd in his story to not have him in the lineup for a couple of games. It's been a difficult go for him. In many ways, we haven't seen him in the lineup, if you will, because he hasn't been able to produce. And that's not, you know, I thought he was playing great on Saturday night, firing shots from other places, which is kind of what he needed to do. You know, so they still need him in the lineup. He's better than the alternative. He's one of their better players. And you believe he'll get back to scoring because that's been what he's been most of his career. That said, you know, like any team, you lose a top player. You look at Edmonton, they're going to be without the best player in the world. So you're never going to replace that guy. Maybe it's an unfair comparison, but that's a team that's going to be up against it for the next 3 weeks without Connor McDavid. If you took Elias Pettersson out of this lineup, you took Quinn Hughes out of this lineup, the Canucks are going to be up against it. Below that, though, you know, they've been scoring by committee, and that's been a story all season. The fact this team's been able to score goals has gotten them out of trouble. You know, Zach McEwen did score a goal on Monday night, you know, did what you needed him to do, went to the tough area, got a good shot off, scored a goal because of it. It's a team that clearly has shown that they can manage themselves offensively. That, you know, as long as they're top players in the lineup, they're going to find goals. And I think that in the end will carry them through. I mean, there's still lots of reasons to be nervous about, you know, the state of their lineup, that they're still, you know, they had a really great start to the year, and now all of a sudden they're giving up too many shots. We know this. We can see this. And Jacob Markstrom's bailing them out. You'd rather not have to have your goalie bail you out every night. But everything's been working. They've been picking up points all season using this formula. And to me, there's every reason to think it's going to carry forward.
Ed, you and I have talked about stuff like this over the years. I look at a team like, and I'm not comparing the Canucks to a Nashville Predators who were just in town, but Nashville get to the Stanley Cup Finals and don't get it done, but you assume, okay, they're on the right track, and you look at where they are now. I even look at Winnipeg 2 years ago. Everyone said, oh, you know, Winnipeg should have made the Stanley Cup Final, but they didn't, but they're a team. You see how quickly it comes apart. How do you balance that of how quickly things can change in the NHL versus being patient?
Grasshopper, that is the eternal question, isn't it, of San Jose?
Yeah.
Look at where they were, where they positioned.
Put us over the top.
That's it. And, you know, and the bottom has just fallen out. And it looks like it's going to stay that way for the foreseeable future. It's a balancing act. It's a really tricky one. And I don't have the answers. That's why, you know, GMs and presidents get paid what they do. Figure out where the team is in the revolution. What do we need? How do we balance the needs for the future versus the needs for the present? I was just scribbling down a note here. Jason Zucker trade fell yesterday, and you think about, boy, that's a big deal. They paid a hefty price for him. And then you look at what Benning paid. You look at the grief Benning took for the JT Miller trade. I don't know. I'd much rather have JT Miller in my lineup than Jason Zucker. And the price is, you know, Benning first and a third, a lottery protected first and a third. Zucker cost them a first round pick, a past first-round pick, and Galchenyuk was a salary dump. I get that. But those are the kind of trades, and right age, right fit for the team, all that going forward. This is a really long-winded way of saying I really think their deadline deal will be getting Michael Ferland back.
Who, by the way, has just been assigned to the Utica Conference for a six-day loan.
Breaking news. Have we got a breaking news? Darm, do we have breaking news?
You music? Drop the sound effect in there. Actually, I think we spent our budget on sound effects on, like, coffee or something.
And then beyond that, they still have options in Utica. And I think we've talked about this. I think people want to see Brogan Rafferty play a couple of games this year. I wouldn't mind seeing Cole Lind. And Justin Bailey, to me, was just fine last night. He gave them – he drew a penalty when they were going good in the first period. He had a little zip to his game. McEwen was terrific. So I don't think long-term they can, you know – supplant or replace the guys they were that are out of the lineup, but short term they give them a little something, and it's been a while since we could say that about a Canucks team.
Dare I say one other name? Oliu Alevi. We can move on.
I'm curious about that. Obviously, you want to give some players some seasoning and everything else, and you can have guys fill in for injuries. But I started to see some stuff this week to the Canucks look at Hoglander or Podkolzin to give up a piece for the playoffs for this year. And ultimately, I'd say, no, that's stupid. But, you know, you talked about Markstrom, and you look at how that landscape could change. If you can't come to an agreement, you don't want to give him the money. And he goes, I just think these are all fascinating storylines sitting in front of the Vancouver Canucks. I think, obviously, before you can compare yourself to a Nashville or Winnipeg, you actually have to go on a playoff run. But I think there's some fascinating scenarios that are going to play out over the next, not just couple months, but into this off season as well, because you need to know what this team has coming next year, and then you need to have the cap on top of that. So, like, for me, did the Calgary game bother you at all, Ed?
A little bit, just because I thought they got out. I thought they got outworked. I thought Calgary was the more, you know, that word desperate gets thrown around so much. So we'll use it. They were the more desperate team. They were the harder working team. They were the team that ready to play and pay the price. And that, and Vancouver just kind of like the acquiesced. They really didn't show up. And it's one of the few times this year they haven't, where you could really pinpoint them and say, yeah, you know, that team got outworked on that night. Now, it only lasted the one night. And, you know, I still think, you know, they've just built up too much credit in the goodwill bank to write them off at this point. Again, I look at the next stretch of like 8, 9, 10 games. The schedule is in their favor. I think if they get 6, 7 wins over that stretch, you know, we're not talking about that. And if they don't, you know, now we have a problem.
So just before we wrap up, I don't want to revisit the Sedin stuff, because we know we have a jersey retirement coming, and we've done a separate podcast. You can go check that out on our website, so theprovince.com, vancouversun.com, or if actually you could subscribe through Apple Podcasts, so you get it automatically. But you guys told some of your favorite Sedin stories last week. But it is interesting to see these old players in the building. And I know that there's, you know, you talk about the Ryan Kessler redemption tour, or, you know, what Marcus Naslund's role was here. And Ed, I was just reading an old column of yours that talked about, you know, Naslund's chemistry with Bertuzzi and how good that was in that 2002-2003 season in particular. Is there too much of this happening for the Canucks, to put it like, is this, I guess what I'm saying, is it cynical to say this is too much of a 50th anniversary, or is this the Canucks catching up over something that they should have been doing all along?
I remember having a conversation, I think it was with Lawrence Gilman, and it was basically along the lines, if you don't have the tradition of a championship team, you kind of have to create your own. And I think that's what they're doing. And yeah. I think that's, and that's fine. I think they've really struck a nice tone with these things. You know, and I wrote about this. I think it's over the top for everybody, unless you happen to live in British Columbia. And then I think it's a celebration of these two transcendent figures, you know, who really transformed the franchise, who, you know, means so much to the community, to the hockey team, all those things. So, yeah, you know, celebrate it. That's fine. Kind of be aware that, yeah, maybe there's a bit of marketing involved in this and all the rest of it. But they're also worthy of the adulation and everything that goes along with it.
To say about it meaning something only British companies is kind of the point, though, isn't it? At the end of the day, is that, like, you need you need to win over somebody. And if you're not winning over your local fans, I mean, you hope to build a national brand, but you're never going to build a national brand, which is unfortunate because of...
Well, why not?
Well,
I mean, you have to win Stanley Cups for sure.
Right.
But, I'm not going to say Gretzky, but when a Paul Coffey's jersey right. goes up in the rafters in Edmonton or, you know, even a Patrick Roy in, right. in Montreal, people are paying attention. And I think that's to Gilman's point, you know. Well, you're not going to say they won three cups, so, but this is,
right.
do you care in Toronto that the Canadiens numbers are going up?
Well, it's unfortunate because you should. And I think this is a point that many people who are involved in the management team of the Vancouver Canucks over the years would say that it's ridiculous the Canadiens didn't get more credit. I mean, many people have pointed this out. You know, that's also the stupid reality of the modern sort of media landscape we're in, where it's you open up the website of a competing, broadcast. And they have seven stories on the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, breaking down whatever kind of ridiculous minutia. And I don't know where the Canadiens really – it should be number one, but it's not. And so at the end of the day, you have to focus on the people that are actually paying attention to your team. You do have to create a bit of a mythology for them, and that's fine because there have been great players. And certainly in the last 20 years, a lot of winning hockey. And the fact that, you know, the West Coast Express era team didn't win a Stanley Cup, I mean – that is a story. It's unfortunate. They should have. The narrative would be so different if they had. And just as it would be if 2011 had gone differently. They just needed to win one more game, and this is a completely different story.
So I'll take that BC story then and say, this is our Dick Duff. If there's Marcus Naslund, whose jersey is retired, and if there's Alex Burrows in the Ring of Honor, I'll just throw three names out at you, and you tell me if they should get retired, Ring of Honor, or nothing, Luongo, Bieksa, Kessler.
Luongo retired, Kessler, Bieksa, Ring of Honor.
I think that's about right. I mean, at that point, you've recognized, you know, I think the five biggest, most sort of popular, most, I suppose, transcendent names. There were a lot of other key players, but those guys were around for a long time. And I think the longevity for those three, all three of those players is important. And Luongo's status, as I think, also the Olympics is such a huge important part of that story too.
It was 10 years ago tomorrow. I know Ed's writing about that. So running out of time here, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Thanks, Patrick. Thanks, Ed. Thanks, Darm. Again, thanks to the folks at Key West Ford, keywestford.com, BC's largest selection of Mustangs. If you're interested in one of those, you can check it out at their website. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you next week.